Welcome to the Grand Falloon Audio Tour. I'm in the studio here with Kathleen Clark Perez. Kathleen, nice to be here with you.
Nice to be here, Rick Brewer. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and I'm ready to get started and tell you about one of the first places that I went to on our tour here.
Great. Where was the first place you visited?
The first stop on this tour was at the IU Lilly Library, and this is where Kurt Vonnegut's personal papers collection is stored, and Vonnegut sold the collection right before he passed away, and when I got there, I spoke with a few librarians and Dr. Ed Comentale.
And I am the Associate Vice Provost for Research in Arts and Humanities, as well as the Director of the Arts and Humanities Council at IU.
Think of Ed as sort of the mastermind behind the Grand Falloon. He's the one who started the whole project, and he also knows a ton about Kurt Vonnegut. And I wanted to learn something about Kurt Vonnegut from this collection that a lot of people don't know about.
What did you want to learn about?
I wanted to learn about Vonnegut's early days, before everyone knew him as the famous Kurt Vonnegut. Sort of maybe the days when he was struggling. And one of the most interesting things I found out was that he was an awful student.
Kurt Vonnegut is probably one of the greatest academic failures of all time. He failed out of Cornell. He failed out of the University of Chicago. He failed out of summer classes at Ball State. He was really a terrible student.
But even though Vonnegut wasn't necessarily a good student, he eventually did get a couple of degrees in anthropology, not English, as everyone might think. And he just never gave up on becoming a writer.
And a lot of his early writings were sent to what would be called middlebrow journals or magazines, in that he was hoping that writing could support his large and growing family. But at the same time, what we know about Vonnegut from his biographers and from his family is that he had a very deep and sort of anxious concern about his reputation. And he was very committed to being a serious writer, one that was accepted by the establishment and by other writers. And I think one of his great sadnesses in life was that he did not get the acclaim from the academic establishment that he would have liked.
And so one of the interesting things that Vonnegut did during these early days of struggle was he kept his rejection letters. And then when I talked to some of the librarians at the Lilly, they said that this is pretty rare for writers to do. Out of all the hundreds of collections there, they haven't found any other authors who keep the rejection letters. And part of the reason people don't keep them is because they're very generic sounding.
"We regret that the enclosed manuscript is not suited to the present needs of either of these magazines. Please accept our thanks for the privilege of considering it, the editors." And my favorite thing about this is that it has "sorry" stamped in red on it as well.
This is Rebecca Bauman. She's the head of public services at the Lilly.
"My absolute favorite letter is this one. It's just one of these pre-printed rejection slips, but it's all crumpled up. And if you flip it on the back, it has a shopping list. Corn, 6 wieners, Duff's Devil's Food, which is a kind of cake mix, and Junket Instant Icing Mix. So we know what the Vonnegut family was having for dinner. We appreciate your sending this material. We regret that it cannot be used. Dear Mr. Vonnegut, we are sorry to report that this manuscript did not find an opening here. Thank you for having sent it.
No longer published. Hasn't been for more than 3 years. Funny."
That's great.
So it's fun to look at those early letters of rejection. It's hilarious to think of anyone turning down a Vonnegut short story, particularly these middlebrow magazines that aren't incredibly respected.
So what does this say to us about Vonnegut?
Quite a lot, actually. It shows us that he valued the process and struggle of becoming a writer. And he kept these because he maybe wore it as a badge of honor. You know, we can only sort of speculate. He also might have wanted to keep them because he wanted to inspire future writers who come to the Lilly and look at his collection and say, hey, if Kurt Vonnegut, one of the best writers of the 20th century, can achieve his goals, you know, maybe I can too as a young aspiring writer. So at the end of the day, Vonnegut's just a very interesting figure in history.
Well, I'm definitely feeling inspired, but what does this have to do with this year's Grand Falloon Festival?
Well, Kathleen, it has everything to do with this year's Grand Falloon Festival, because for those listeners out there who don't know, a Grand Falloon is a made-up word, by Kurt Vonnegut. And it's sort of to just mean randomness. It's almost sort of like a meaningless association, but at its core, it's all about just random celebrations. And the Grand Falloon is a celebration of the arts and humanities here in Southern Indiana.
So, Rick, I know this is the second year for the Grand Falloon Festival, and last year it featured musicians like Father John Misty and local musician Amy O. What does the festival this year have in store for us?
So at this year's festival, we're going to be hearing from acts like Sudan Archives, Nico Case, Duran Jones and the Indications, and local band Huckleberry Funk. And we're also going to be hearing from Voces Nove, which is a chamber choir based here in Bloomington. And we'll get to more on them in just a second. All right, so who are we listening to right now?
That's Duran Jones and the Indications and their song Don't You Know off their new album, American Love Call. They're performing at Upland Brewing Company on Saturday, May 11th. But also playing on Saturday and Sunday is local chamber choir Voces Nove. And for those who might have gone to last year's Grand Falloon, you might remember the performance of the Vonnegut Requiem. It's Vonnegut's written interpretation of a Requiem text, and Voces Nove will be performing it at the Grand Falloon.
So what exactly did Vonnegut do again? He wrote his own Requiem.
Yeah, he wrote his own Requiem.
Kurt Vonnegut had gone to the premiere of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Requiem and had read the translation of the text, and he liked the music, and then he read the translation. He really didn't like the translation of the text. He found it rather dark and bleak. And he went home and rewrote it.
That's Sue Swaney, the director of Voces Nove.
He had it retranslated back into Latin, and this composer, Edgar Grana, composed a big piece, a big hour-long with a big full orchestra.
So Voces Nove is a chamber choir, so pretty small when compared to a larger orchestra choir or an orchestra itself.
Right, but Sue loved the text so much that she wanted to make her own version for the choir. So she divided it into 9 separate movements and commissioned 9 different composers to create the music. One composer per movement, so a lot of variety there. Here's a little bit from the first movement.
The traditional text says, rest eternal grant them, O Lord, and let light eternal shine upon them. And he says, rest eternal grant them, O cosmos, and let not light disturb their sleep.
And this is several movements in. And then a little of this.
What I love about the text is that it's both reverent and irreverent at the same time, which I think is so characteristic of Vonnegut. He takes this traditional Requiem text and kind of turns it upside down. He was so funny about the whole idea of let light eternal shine upon them, which is a main part of the traditional Requiem. And he said, it's just awful to think about sleeping with the lights on. Let them rest. So he kind of turned that upside down, and I think it's really effective.
So when is Voces Nove performing?
Voces Nove performs on both Saturday and Sunday. That's May 11th and 12th at the Unitarian Universalist Church. Sue is expecting the Vonnegut Requiem will be recorded and broadcasted for a PBS documentary in the future. So who's this?
That's Krungabin, however you want to say it. I won't be the first person to mispronounce it. But anyway, this is their song, People Everywhere, parentheses, still alive, end parentheses.
And so you have one more preview to share?
Yes, and we're going to be diving into a song by a local Bloomington artist named Austin White. And he will be performing at the Bishop on Friday, May 10th. And it's his first show in 10 years. And the interesting thing about Austin and this performance at the Bishop is that the Bishop is known for artists coming in who are performing bluegrass, indie rock, soul music. But Austin actually makes pop music, and it's very rare that in Bloomington especially, that an artist will perform live pop music. So one of Austin's most recent creations is a song called 24 Hours. And I talked to Austin a few weeks ago about how this song sort of came to be.
Austin White is a general creative. Just a person who's into everything, whether it be audio, visual. Like, if something doesn't exist, I like making it exist.
What was maybe, like, the first sort of thing that came in your mind to write this song?
It happened in July of 2018. I visited Chicago to see some friends, and it was just one of those when you make the drive from Bloomington to Chicago, and then you're just so tired. And then I went outside for some reason. I went, it is daytime, and what just happened? And everyone's like, oh, daytime. And so that's where the title 24 Hours came from, because we were just, like, we were up, like, the entire time and totally felt fine. So that was the idea for the title. That was the idea for the vibe of the song. But the song actually is like a offshoot, or it was inspired by John Mayer's song New Light. You're gonna see me in a new light if you give me just one night to meet you under. I love this John Mayer song so much. I'd love to make something similar to it, but not like take it completely, you know. It's like I like where this song came from. So I can see you. My song and John Mayer's song, we both share the same tempo, we share the same bass rhythm, and also the same drum, which is an old Linn drum machine. And so I started making my song. I was like, let me start with the rhythm, just a I used an app for on your phone, which is amazing. I don't even know what it's called, drum machine. And so I get my keyboard out, and I'm just hitting the chords, and I'm like, all right, I think that's a good chord. Save that chord, and then I'll add another chord. You go. The keyboard was based off of a Yamaha DX7, the classic keys from that, and then just a bass note, and that's at least the anatomy of how the song worked. And then from there, the song basically kind of just made itself, because the bass follows the chord progression, or the chord progression of the keys follow the bass. Whenever I write a song, a lot of people's biggest hurdle is just writing a song, starting to talk for no reason. It's kind of hard to go like, what? Why am I talking right now? This is stupid. But a thing that I figured out for myself is just ask yourself a question and then answer it. So the song initially was called How Are You Feeling Today? And then that's where the opening lines come from, where I just answered my own question. It's like, being honest, I've been better. I've been quiet, nonchalant. Being honest, I've been better. I've been quiet, nonchalant. And from there, the whole song is about just me answering my own question. How am I feeling today? You know, when you try to get super, like, vague and cryptic, and it's just like, what are you talking about, man? And, you know, later on, I don't think I'm afforded that respect to find anything cryptic and extra meaning behind my music. So until you earn the respect of that, I think it's best to just stay direct and just let them build a relationship. And then once you build a relationship, you're able to start really exploring more and more who you are, and the fans will be there to go, I know where you're coming from. If you're going to play a show for the first time in 10 years, you better give it to them. And what to expect is just good energy. Like, I really, like I said, I try to think of the audience and where they're coming from, and just want you to get your money's worth, and I want you to have a good time. I definitely want to show them some different kinds of music, because it won't just be songs like that, but it'll definitely have more of a kind of a hip hop, but more a pop sound. And I think that's fairly unique, at least here in Bloomington. 24 hours, I just laying down. 24 hours, and I'm good.
I think this brings us to the end of the audio tour of the upcoming Grand Falloon Festival.
That's exactly right, Kathleen, and we are exiting this tour with a little bit of Huckleberry Funk and their song Silky and Smooth. And if you're interested in learning more about all the different variety of acts that are going to be performing at the Grand Falloon, we couldn't cover every single one because there's so many, but the full schedule is in this post that you are currently listening to, and it's going to be a great festival. And Kathleen, it's been a pleasure being on this tour with you. Thanks for joining me.
Likewise.
That was it!
If you're looking for your lady, I bet she getting down. Cause this funky dress, brother, just got in town now. Don't scuff my shoes, they cost more than your house. Don't cuff my pants, I do that by myself. I'm just trying to...